morning. Good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday. My name is Lamo. I'm going to lead today's discussion. And just wanted to say a few things before we start. If you have cell phones, would you please either turn them on mute, vibrate, or turn them off so as not to disturb the the time we have together. This teaching will be streamed, and I will open, you know, the floor for discussion and comments and so forth. So when you respond to a question and so forth, would you please wait for the mic, because people who are listening online cannot hear you no matter how loudly you speak. Even if everyone in this room can hear you, they can't hear you at all. So if you please wait for the handheld mic, which we'll pass around. So you're welcome to bring drinks into the Gampa. So, yes, and Geshe-la has asked us for me to remind everyone about the importance of circumambulating the stupa outside. It has primary relics, Dharmakaya relics, and then many, many of them, which are more powerful than the secondary relics, which is like the little pearl relics of the Buddha or his clothes or so forth, even more powerful for accumulating merit and purification, even than that. It's amazing. So, and also, when you go to and from the stupa to turn the prayer wheels clockwise, and that when you do that, when you turn it one time, you have the merit of actually saying those mantras that are in each prayer wheel just that one time. So it's quite amazing also. Now, we'll start this discussion first by doing some prostrations. And if you feel uncomfortable doing that, which when I first came, I really did not want to do that. did not know what everyone was doing. But anyway, you are very welcome to just remain standing. And we do this, out of respect for all the teachings and the holy images that are in the room. And it's also a practice, one of the seven limbs. It's an antidote to pride. And that's why those who are Buddhists do these prostrations. So if you'd like to join me in three prostrations to the altar, please stand. Okay, so now if you will go to the only book we have, the Gold Book, and turn to page 183. 183. And on the right-hand side toward the bottom, toward the middle, it says mantra recitation. And below that, between two lines, you see a mantra. That's Shakyamuni Buddhist mantra. So let's chant that three times. Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha Tayata Om Mune Mune turn to page 34. 3-4. And then in the middle again, it says, the four immeasurables. So let's read that in English. Page 34. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Then I understand you're actually chanting the chanting version now. Okay, so that's on page 37. Toward the bottom, it says the Four Immeasurables chanting version. So let's chant that in Tibetan. Sentien tam che de wa dong de wei gyu dong dem par ju chi below. You see two mantras. So let's say Chenrezig's mantra 8 times. And then below that, Green Tara's mantra 7 times while thinking about the people on the prayer list and those in our hearts and minds. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Okay, so the children are welcome to go to their classes. And if your child has never been to a class, if you'll please accompany them, find out where to pick them up afterwards. Today I'd like to lead a discussion on Dharma and the workplace, which I've done before. In Western society, work often defines us. When we meet someone new, we want to know their name, where they're from, and what work that they do. And if they're students, we want to know what major they're taking for their future career. So I remember even as a child asking and being asked, what do you want to do when you grow up? So we spent quite a few decades of our life devoted to, focused on getting education for, training for, and actually being in the workplace. And sometimes we even continue by training to find another job, another completely different career. And then we come to the center out of curiosity or to find answers to some really deep questions that we have about life. And so we go to the teachings, we read Dharma books, Dharma magazines, and we go home and we might analyze these topics, perhaps meditate on them on a meditation cushion. But as you know, and I know very well, that it's very, very difficult to bring the Dharma into other areas of our life after we leave the center, even after we leave this room, and after we are off the meditation cushion at home. But unless we bring the Buddha Dharma into our workplace, unless we practice the Dharma at work, we may lose the opportunity to take full advantage of our precious human life. Today I'd like to break down the main topic, Dharma at the workplace, into three parts: the purpose of work, problems and dissatisfaction at work, and then solutions to those problems. But before we start on this discussion, I'd like for us to do a short meditation practice. So I guess the main way to start is just to think about your posture. And the most important thing is just to keep your back straight and try to relax all the tensions that you have in your body. Relax your jaw. If you feel uncomfortable, sort of, you can shift and then find your most comfortable position. If sitting on a cushion gets uncomfortable, you could see you can find a chair and sit in the chair. And then we'll try to stabilize our mind and bring our focus to the breath. And even if you are a seasoned meditator, you well know that thoughts and emotions, projects will come up. You also hear many sounds. You'll feel people shifting and so forth. But when that happens, just label it as a thought, as an emotion, a project, a sound, and just let it go and bring your focus back to your breath. Now you can focus either on the air going in and out of your nostrils, or you can focus on your abdomen going in and out. And you can try to keep your eyes not wandering around the room, but focused in a space in front of you, a few feet in front, with your eyes slightly closed or unfocused in front, but open. And I'll ring the bell when the exercise is finished. So now I invite everyone to introduce yourselves to three or four people. Just try to break up into small groups of three or four, because I'm only going to give you about 10 minutes. If you have a big group, it's hard for everyone to speak. Then make sure everyone has a chance to speak. And this is the topic is the purpose of work, why we work. And then I'll ring the bell, and then if you'll please go back to your seats, or you can even remain in that with your group if you like, because we'll be doing this two more times. And then I'll read an excerpt from Happiness at Work by His Holiness. So if you please would just do that, break into groups of three or four. The discussion and try to remember the main points of what you talked about concerning the purpose of work. I stopped it early because I could hear people talking about other things too, like satisfaction and so forth. That's a different topic. So would anyone like to talk about why they work? And if anyone wants to, if you please wait for the handheld mic. Here's Andre.
Yeah, we had a really good discussion, Pam and Joanne and myself.
You have to put it right close to your mouth.
Yeah, we had a really good discussion, and so I think pretty much all three of us, we agreed that, you know, that why we work is because we want to do something, and we try to find employment. We're able to find employment that was meaningful to our lives and brought meaning. Not only to what we do, but was helpful to other people as well, you know. And I think that's very important. We talked about you know, taking the time to discover who you are, and then when you look for employment, right, you're going to find something that reflects who you are, and then when you're doing that, right, if you're fortunate to find that, then it's not work at all. You know, and then you become someone like me. I said, who I had to retire because of my health. I didn't want to retire, you know. And I'm struggling with retirement because I enjoy doing what I did so much.
Yeah, which is teaching.
Which is teaching.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I volunteer teach now and stuff, so I can keep doing it. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful! Oh, here's right here.
Hi, I'm Amanda. So it's actually funny that we're talking about this because I just checked out a book from the Library of Soul and these guys, What Would Buddha Do at Work? So I've been like reading that a lot because over the years my view of of work and what that means has changed. Initially, why I worked was for money and material well-being. I'm just being really, really frank and honest. And that got me in a lot of trouble because I made decisions in past jobs based out of fear that have caused a lot of emotional consequences and a lot of suffering from that and a lot of fear as a result of that. And today, like, my since coming here, this place has helped me a lot, and just through the emotional suffering that I've encountered because of just past things that I've done, you know, I've realized, like, my purpose of work is to try to give back, and there's that balance, you know, giving back to someone freely without expecting a lot in return, but in doing that, I get a lot of peace in return, and it's really, really hard to do that, especially when you're encountered with difficult work situations, difficult customers. So it's a big challenge for me, and it's something that I have to be mindful of every single second of the day. It's really hard to put into practice, but I have to sometimes breathe and step back and realize what am I trying to give to the situation instead of take back from the situation.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Anyone else? Just the purpose of work.
Yes. I found that, at least for me, the purpose of work is, it's not as much working for money or anything. It's just mainly working on personal improvement, you know, doing whatever it is. You know, I found I travel a lot, and I even consider that work because that's just bettering myself so I can be of maximum service to the people around me. And I found that, you know, through doing work like that, eventually you'll get to a point where it doesn't even feel like work. You know, work means that you're working towards a goal, you're working towards whether it's financial security, payment, anything like that. But I found that the hardest work just comes from really finding out who you are at the core, you know, who that is. That's the hardest work for me.
Thank you. See, yes, right there. Is?
Hey. Is this on? representing our little group here, we've kind of expanded the definition of work to include motherhood and include the chore-type work that's not glamorous or gets you paid, but that doing the laundry means your kids get to go to school with clean clothes, or doing your homework in college means you get a degree, and so that these things are, it's work for a means to a different goal, like a delayed kind of gratification as opposed to, you know, I did these tasks today at work and I wasn't fired.
Okay.
So it was just a different definition of work for us.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to read the what His Holiness the Dalai Lama says about the purpose of work in his the book Art of Happiness at Work. There's nothing wrong to work simply to make money. Since to survive in a modern industrial society, everyone needs to find their own way of making a living. This attitude toward work as primarily a source of one's livelihood is very realistic, particularly if the individual has a family, especially young children to support. There is, in fact, a dimension to work that is noble. When the motivation to make money becomes an end in itself, we lose sight of the very purpose of making money, which is to provide ourselves with the means to accomplish something. The trouble with pursuing money just for the sake of money is that this makes us a victim of greed, never-ending greed. Then we are never satisfied. We become slaves of money. Power based on wealth is artificial and on the surface. People respect the money, not you. When you lose the money, the power and respect vanish. There is an underlying assumption that money can solve all of our problems. If we equate money with happiness, then we become engaged in this continuous cycle of wealth creation even after becoming wealthy. One is now a slave to money. To reduce the nagging worry about not having enough money, take just a moment to ask yourself, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? See whether all this money is really necessary, whether the activities are really beneficial. That simple act of reflecting and pausing to consider, to reason, can have an impact. Try to relate to money with a healthy perspective, even Even if you have less money, you may enjoy a greater sense of well-being with regard to wealth and money, free from the unrealistic expectations about what wealth will provide. And now, this favorite topic. Problems or dissatisfaction at work. I know you want to talk a lot about this. But if you'll go back to your group and talk about problems or dissatisfactions at work that you've encountered, you may be experiencing at work, or if you feel like you don't, that's too personal, you can talk about someone else who seems kind of dissatisfied at work. And then try to just say the problem. Don't talk, you know, about just the solutions, because I'm only going to give you 10 minutes again. So I'll sound the bell to stop. Okay, so now I'd like people to just state the problem that they're having at work, not a solution or anything, or just a brief statement of a dissatisfaction or a problem. And anyone like to share any?
Our group, mostly it was communication on some form, but it was mainly, does upper management understand what lower people are doing and lower workers are doing and the communication between the two?
That's true. That's true for almost every organization's communication is a problem. Anyone else?
There's often a conflict of vision and values. And it really doesn't matter what the task is. People have to agree on where they're going and why. And a lot of times, especially in bigger organizations, nobody can agree on that.
Yeah, on your mission or vision.
I mean, you might say you agree, but in your heart of hearts, you might not.
Yeah, okay.
In our group, I think one thing we talked about was that in your work life, you're almost certain to have problems that are going to come up because sometimes you're going to be working with people that might be really incompetent, or they might be alcoholic, or they might have secret motives. For example, I once worked with somebody who was actually trying to sabotage our work in order so he could get a contract to do it as an independent contractor. And all these things come up. You can't do anything about it. You just have to cope with it as best you can.
Yeah, that's a big problem. Anyone else want to state a problem?
I think one of the biggest problems that problems can cause at work is the lack of sleep that this whole country is suffering from. And because of that, a lot of us are not really being able to think properly and make correct judgments because we are so stressed and we don't sleep and we're not there with our families and our friends and we do not do quality work because of the level of stress.
Oh. Is it over here on the...
I've been a victim of sexual harassment at work, which was very difficult to deal with. And since I was a contractor, it was my word against his. And it was a very prestigious company.
So in The Art of Happiness at Work, His Holiness says, there will always be problems in life. It is just not possible to go through life without encountering problems. There is no event from which you get 100% satisfaction. Some dissatisfaction will always remain. The better we are able to accept that fact, the better we will be able to cope with life's disappointments. And he continues, it's mostly about solutions to problems. So that's what I like to, you go back together again, for a short period of time to discuss now the solutions to those problems. So if you could get together and talk.
No, it's pretty frustrating.
I can imagine. I can imagine. It's not straight or supporting or what?
Especially for
you. Okay. And now I invite people to share solutions to problems at work. Anyone interested? Oh, yes.
As we tried to discuss the solution, we found that we went right back to the problems again because the problems were so big, you know, to solve. So what was our end result? To live with what we're given and deal with what we're given and not expect more?
to lower your expectations?
The other thing I think was really to... Since a lot of the problems were related to the political funding for certain organizations and everything that we're a part of, that to be more active and to promote more activity within the political spectrum, you know, lobbyists, et cetera, that for whatever we could possibly can do.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Oh, in the back. Oh, there it is.
I do some yoga and core strengthening exercises so that it takes some pressure off my back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And then and back. Our group was talking about meditation as well, and also the idea of working to perfect who you are inside, and not for just. To be a better person and not with the goal of making money, because when you work and try to do the best you can and have empathy for the people around you, really care, then the financial is going to come by itself. So try to detach and not have the goal of being right all the time. Listen to the other ones around you as well and care. And meditate as much as you can.
Oh, great.
And and work for somebody that cares.
Oh, yes.
As well. Work, choose your employer the way they choose you. Google them.
Great. Let's see. Is there...
For me, I don't really have a job because I go to school. And, like, verbal stuff that happens, all of it for me is just, or any problem is just forgive and forget. Because as long as you forgive them for what they did or they forgive you for what you did, it doesn't really matter what happened. And if anything happens and you've already, like, don't really notice what they say because you've already forgotten what they've said, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't hurt you. So.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Okay. Just a couple more.
Yeah, I was very fortunate because I discovered Buddhism and started practicing Buddhism before I started teaching, and so the problems that I would find were students with behavioral problems, and sometimes coworkers too with behavioral problems, you know. And so it's like for me, I just recognize that. It's, you know, what they do is not who they are, you know, and so for a student, for example, if the student was upset and really frustrated and stuff like that, I would allow that student to vent, you know, even if it was just a bunch of flowery curse words and stuff like that, you know, I would allow the student to vent, and then the student would get that out of system. And then once all that energy has died down, then okay, now what can we do, right? And then I found that the student was able to open up and begin to express, and then I was able to understand what was going on, and I was able to help them. So, but that's all due to Buddhism. You know, I didn't have that before, but I understood that what we do is not who we are, And so, and for me, I'm trying to teach to their potential and help them to become who they really are. So.
Oh, thank you.
It works.
Just one more.
Okay. In our group, we talked about adjusting our attitude. You know, Dan talked about that there are problems that are always going to come up, and if you can just sort of acknowledge that things are going to come up and you just deal with it and you know, sort of try to keep some mental equilibrium. And Rona talked about the same kind of thing, that, you know, just adjusting herself to the situation around her made, you know, actually increased her happiness. So it was kind of interesting that in our group, what came up sort of naturally was adjusting our own minds to, especially for things that we couldn't do anything about. So you just adjust how you react to it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for sharing. So now I'd like to read what His Holiness says. This brings us to the reality that everything is interconnected. If there are certain problems in the workplace or layoffs, and one is having difficulty finding a job, there are always many factors at play. Maybe some worldwide economic conditions or even some environmental problems may be at the root of the problem. In those cases, it does no good to take things so personally and complain to the company or perhaps direct your anger toward one individual boss. To build contentment, simply reflect on how fortunate you are to have the work, how there are many people unable to get any kind of work. You can think there are other good things in my life and I still have it better compared to many. This is always the reality. We have to make a special effort to cultivate good relationships with people at work, get to know the other people, and bring our basic good human qualities to the workplace. That can make a tremendous difference. Then, whatever kind of work we do, it can be a source of satisfaction. Then you look forward to going to work and you're happier there. Even one person can make a big difference. One person can change the atmosphere of the workplace environment. In a situation where there may be hostile coworkers or demanding supervisors at work or a tense environment, a wider perspective can sometimes help. Realizing that this person's behavior may have nothing to do with me, there may be other causes for their behavior, and not taking it too personally. Their hostile outbursts may actually have more to do with unrelated issues, maybe even problems at home. We sometimes tend to forget these simple truths. And also, I should mention that if we are talking about trying to cultivate a deeper compassion for others, that compassion should be unbiased. Ideally, it should be directed toward everyone equally. That's genuine compassion, universal compassion. We are all interdependent. We all depend on one another for our livelihood. No matter what kind of job we have, there are many other coworkers who contribute in their own way to the running of the company that we depend on for our livelihood. Without them, the company simply would not exist, and we would not be able to earn our living. On cultivating a proper attitude, Solina says, the attitude toward one's work is most important. It is important to have a sense of self, grounded in reality, and undistorted recognition of one's abilities and characteristics. For example, insisting that one is always right, feeling that the way you look at things is the best way to look at things, or the only way to look at things. This kind of attitude may sometimes provide a sense of protection when in actual fact, it closes the door to any real awareness of one's own possible shortcomings. Those with self-confidence have the skills and abilities to back it up, whereas arrogant people are not grounded in reality. They have no valid basis for their inflated opinion of themselves. Humility is a good quality, but low self-esteem will have a negative effect of shutting out any possibility for self-improvement. The tendency of such a person would be to automatically react with the thought, "No, I cannot do this." To overcome that, one should spend time thinking about one's potential, simply as a human being, realizing that all of us have this wonderful human intelligence at our disposal, which can be used to accomplish many things. If there is injustice, then I think inaction is the wrong response. The Buddhist texts mention what is called misplaced tolerance or misplaced forbearance. The appropriate response really is to actively resist it, to try to change its environment rather to accept it. One should take some action. Of course, it depends on the situation, but perhaps one could speak with a boss, with a management, and try to change these things. And in some cases, one may simply need to quit and look for other work. So that might be an answer to abuse. And then here's some final advice. It's not a problem to have your job simply as a means to make money if you derive satisfaction and fulfillment from other areas of life. Even if it means less pay, personally, I think it is better to choose work that is less demanding, that gives you greater freedom, more time to be with your family, or to do other activities, read, engage in cultural activities, or just play. Widen your self-image as a human being with the capacity for friendship, kindness, and unique skills. Look at all the other areas of your life and expand your self-identity beyond the workplace. So your self-image is not based primarily on your salary or position or company you work for, but on your core values. Fuse your sense of self with your work so that there is no separation between your personal life, work life, spiritual life, or home life, so that you don't have to modify your behavior based on where you are. Don't lose sight of what is worthwhile and important in your life. The most important goal is to have a sense of fulfillment. Then I would like to lead a real quick meditation on this. Venerable Matthieu Ricard said, "At some point, we need to sit quietly and think deeply about what we really want to accomplish in life, what really matters in our life. Feel deeply how you really want to spend your life so that after 20 years, you can think back and feel you did your best and think, that's what I wanted to do, and have a sense of fulfillment or accomplishment or putting forth great effort toward that goal." In The Door to Satisfaction, Lama Zofa Rinpoche writes, "Whether you live another hour or another 100 years, what are you going to do with your life? What are you going to do with your life?" So let's sort of sit briefly and meditate on these points. And just think, what do you really want to accomplish in life? What really matters to you? I'd like to end with the dedication, which is on page 246 in the Gold Book. 246, Master Shanti Davis. "May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again." May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Om tare tu tare tu re soha. 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 Thank you very much.